Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Nightlight. Step away from the mainstream and gather around as we enlighten the world and our realities and travel this cosmic journey we call life. Join us as we share with you and provide that beacon that can guide us all to a better way. Explore with us as we examine a metaphysical montage of spiritual insights, covering everything from the mundane to the magical, UFOs to unicorns, and everything in between. This is a time of awakening, of sharing and evolving, of spreading our wings and soaring on the cosmic breath of creation. Come and join with other light-minded spirits as we weave our lights together to seek understanding, enlightenment, and with a little luck, some wisdom. This is Nightlight, a reminder that you are never alone.
Welcome to Nightlight, everybody. Thanks for joining us this lovely evening. And it's going to be a very exciting one, as it always is when Mary Joyce is here. I want to thank first Ken Quiethawk for his great intro. Please check him out on Google. He's a native storyteller, and his way of preserving history and cosmology and teaching lessons to the young through stories is a much preferred way to teaching history in all aspects, much better than dusty books. Mary is here with us again tonight, and this is always once a month I get to talk with Mary, and it is just such an exciting time. She is the editor of Skyships Over Cashiers, that's www.skyshipsovercashiers, which is probably one of the best, most informative websites out there in the field of paranormal and mystical and strange and wonderful things that are happening. She is a reporter of, how will I put this kindly? Reporters used to verify before they put material out there. They don't do that anymore today, but Mary does. And when she has material that she puts up on her website and she reports, you can count on it. You can count that it's been investigated and it's been verified and that she's very sure that this is not just somebody's wild imagination running away with them. And it's refreshing. Now, her website has archives that go back at least a decade or more, so you can get yourself lost in that website for days, hours, whatever. Always have a snack and something to drink and tissues by your side because her material is well put out there, it is well investigated, and it's the kind of website that you can actually just absolutely lose yourself in. The articles are short but poignant and well written, and there's always a good picture too, and I always like to have pictures with my stories. And it will titillate you to the point where you will be forced to probably go back and investigate other areas of the material she's put out there. And that's what I consider to be the best kind of teaching site out there. She gives you enough to make you curious, and that means that your own creativity and your own imagination takes over, and you begin to teach yourself and become a teacher for your own evolution. It's a brilliant way of teaching. It's an amazing way of doing it, and she's done it for a long time. So, welcome to the show, Mary. Glad you could join me again tonight.
Thank you. I think we ought to take your listeners on a behind-the-scenes tour of what you and I did this afternoon or today.
Okay.
We are in two locations and different states. And when Barbara called to confirm the time for the show tonight, she brought up something that some of the listeners had brought to her attention, which was that I'd done a posting and also did a radio show with Barbara about Admiral Byrd. And we talked about how he flew into the interior of Earth from the North Pole. And that really got a lot of people concerned because so much evidence points to the fact that it would have been in Antarctica, not the Arctic, not the North Pole. So I know that I was investigating stuff after that, and I'm sure Barbara was too. There are two publications or two little booklets, I call them pamphlets because they're really quite short, that have addressed this secret diary that he had. One of them was called The Missing Diary of Admiral Richard E. Byrd. The other one's called The Secret Lost Diary of Admiral Richard E. Byrd and The Phantom of the Poles. The last one that I mentioned is, it gets into a lot of commentary by other people. The first one is just that basic diary. Now, here's the problem. How in the world can he, you know, how can we decipher where this really happened? Was it the North Pole or was it Antarctica? And I went back and I read his diary real carefully, and I'm going to read the key paragraph. And he said, "I must write this diary in secrecy and obscurity. It concerns my Arctic flight of the 19th day of February in the year of 1947. Clearly, he has written out the word Arctic, not Antarctica. So when I spoke the last time about this subject and when I wrote about it on the website, I always go back to the original source. This was coming from his diary. So I use that even though the bulk of the sources say this happened in Antarctica. So we're left with a whole bunch of puzzlements, and it all goes back to the Admiral himself. Did he just lump both Arctics and just use that term interchangeably? Did he deliberately do it since it was a secret diary and just to confuse people? I do not know, and I don't know if we will ever know, but that's what I was wrestling with today, and Barbara can now jump in and tell me what her research was.
Well, I found I have found in a number of places it reported that it was Antarctica, and that made more sense to me. Did you get the article that I forwarded to you, Mary? Which is
no, I haven't.
Okay. Well, what I found fascinating was it you can find it in both places. And the article that I found has, I think, four different books that are written by either Richard E. Byrd or Richard Evelyn Byrd Jr. So there are four books out there that seem to say it was the Antarctica. Story of the second Byrd Antarctic expedition. It's the more that I look into it, I find both. And when in his diary he says, "I must write this in secret," my thought there was, he's telling you that he's coding it somehow. That it
right,
is
and he
not...
used the word obscurity too. So this may have been something that he did. Just to
mm-hmm.
hide where this place really was. I'm kind
well,
of leaning
yeah, because,
that might be the case because, the North Pole technically is in the water. So he would have had to have landed in Greenland or somewhere else. There was some confusion in that flight when it seemed like his plane was overtaken and controlled by an outside source. So if indeed all that is true that he wrote about, then it could have happened in the north, and he could have landed who knows where. I don't know.
Well, I do know.
But I don't know if we'll ever know now.
Well, probably not, but I'm hoping that the four books that were written by Bergs, I'm gonna have to get them and read through them, because the ships that the people from Hollow Earth or Inner Earth, whatever you want to call it, they call them Flugelbergs, which has a German connotation.
A German word, yeah.
And the swastika was on a number of their vehicles. Again, you knew that there was a German base in Antarctic. And when Operation, High Jump took place, they told everybody that Admiral Berg was at the North Pole when he was really leading this expedition at the South Pole.
Well,
so,
if I had to make a conclusion right now, I think he did that deliberately to throw people off the track. It was a secret. He was deliberately making it obscure. And at this point, that is what I'm inclined to believe, because it is more logical that it would happen in Antarctica.
Well, yeah, because I know how you research, and I had read at least one of the versions of the diary, and then I heard him mention in several other books that I had read about, you know, Hollow Earth and Inner Earth. And when you get to the message that the Wisdom Keeper or the head of the head Mucky Muck that he talked to, you know, there was a message for humanity there, and he gave the message to our government, and our government ignored it. So
correct.
So they told
the admiral to keep his mouth shut. You know, so there again, we have the government not wanting things to get out to the public.
Well, and also protecting Inner Earth from other people. I mean, what better way to protect Inner Earth than to disguise the entrance to it?
Right.
So,
I don't know if that clears up anything for anybody, but if anybody was listening when you and I talked about Admiral Byrd the first time, at least you know that we're trying real hard to give you the truth on these things. I even requested the papers of Admiral Byrd, the originals, which are in the archives at Ohio State University. I have not gotten response, and probably never will, but when I got into their archive records, there's tons of boxes, and they tell you where they're located. And so I guess if somebody lived right there where the university is, they could go in and find some of these things, because they give you, like even the one where this diary would be located, it gives you where it is located. So if somebody is in the area of Ohio State University and want to really do some research on it, maybe they can find the original. Wouldn't that be nice?
Absolutely. Well, you know, I'm tempted to... I mean, there are four other books. One is The Kingdom of Agartha, A Journey into Hollow Earth, the Marquis, Alexander St. Yves. Oh, I can't read that. It's French.
You're getting into secondary people.
Yeah. Well, that's why I thought that the four books by the Byrds would be probably more authentic. So, and
right.
I didn't realize that there was... there was a second exploration to the Antarctic by at the South Pole by Berg. So it's you're right, and you know, when our government keeps a secret, you know, strangely, when it's something like this, they manage to lock it down pretty well. So
yes, they do.
I am, you know, I'm gonna get those other three books and read through them and see if there's any information there that might shed some light on this. But he was so specific in saying, I must do this surreptitiously. And,
right.
and you know, it, it, so so by saying it that way, I think he was telling you he was coding it in some way. And I don't know.
That has to be my assumption at this point.
Well, you know, according to the illustrations that we've seen and everything, there's a hole at the top and the bottom. So it could be either
one. Yeah, but somebody
else,
those were not part of his diary. Those were put in by whoever put it together. So all we really have to go by is what he supposedly wrote himself. And
when I've managed to get through the books by the birds, I'll see if there's anything in there that can clarify this for us. Otherwise, I welcome everybody else's investigation. I think it'd be kind of fun to see if anybody can, you know, scrape up anything that you and I have missed or will miss. So we'll put it out there to the audience.
That leads right into what I was originally going to talk to you about, and that it has to do with how the government, again, just comes down on people and won't let them talk. And when I lived in Cocoa Beach, I worked at the college down there in Cocoa, and I lived I lived real close to the Space Center. I could see the launches. I could feel the vibration. So I was right in the heart of it. And one of the more memorable people that I met when I lived there was an astronaut. And he's the only astronaut I've actually, you know, met in person and talked to. And his name is Clark McClellan. Now, Clark, at the time I met him, had been an aerospace engineer for NASA for 35 years, which is a long time. And because he was an engineer, they wanted to capitalize on that kind of skill, and he was trained as an astronaut. Not that he was going to be shot out into space, but they wanted him to be what they call a spacecraft operator. This means that he could test the vehicles before they would go, if there was a problem when the space shuttle was out there. He could oftentimes fix problems from mission control because he was an engineer and an astronaut. So he had two really key positions. While he was working as a spacecraft operator on one of the flights, he had these monitors that were all around him, and one of the monitors showed the open bay of the shuttle, the open bay for the shuttle. And in that, he, for over a minute, saw a very tall alien in a spacesuit who was probably 8 or 9 feet tall. And in the cargo bay with that alien were two normal-size astronauts. At the end of that cargo bay, he could see where the ship for the alien was docked or hovering. It wasn't like what we expect a UFO to look like or a spaceship to look like. It looked like a real smooth-winged flying creature in a sense, but very smooth, very stylized. And he talked too much. He thought that the people or the public had a right to know more than NASA was letting them know. And He spoke out a number of times. He also spoke out about the space shuttle, not the space shuttle, the disaster that we had back in the 80s when
the
space shuttle went down. Yeah, when that crashed or blew up. And before that happened, he and some of the other people who worked at the Kennedy Space Center were very concerned because they had allowed, I think he said, 18 or 19 Libyan nationals to work at the Kennedy Space Center. And he thought that was just idiotic, as did others. But they were threatened that if they made a, you know, stink about it, that they were threatened with prison. And he, quote, said, "I came close to being put in that prison," because he felt that it was really, really wrong. As far as he was concerned, and others also who were having to keep their mouths shut, they felt like those Libyans had sabotaged the Challenger, and that's why it went down. This was really, really personal for him because his girlfriend was on that flight. and was killed. So knowing what he knew beforehand and then what happened, you can imagine how torn up he was. Now, I met him, I don't know if he was totally booted out at that time. I think he was. If he wasn't totally out the door, he was about to be totally out the door. And one Sunday afternoon, I was invited to come over to where he was staying. And he was, at that point, renting a room from a friend with a little bungalow house in Orlando. And so there was just a small group of us there, and he really kind of went through, it was almost like therapy for him, because he was just letting out all of this stuff that was happening. And so I've always had a great deal of sympathy for him. But the government blackballed him after that, and they've done that to other people. And after he lost his job at NASA, he had trouble getting any kind of a decent job. I think he ended up being a bus driver sometimes, and of course maybe just basic Social Security. So he really was penalized. He's not the only one. There's other ones too, but he spoke too much and he criticized too much. So it's the inclination that I think many of us would have. You know, if we saw something wrong, we would want to point it out. If we felt there was something the public needed to know, we would want to get it out to the public. And you and I certainly would want to do that, because we wouldn't be doing what we're doing if we didn't feel that way. So I have great compassion for him. And anybody who's really deep into this kind of thing, what really went on at NASA, Clark's papers were finally published by somebody else after he died, and he died just about a year ago. And they would not allow him, or it would never work out for him to publish it while he was still living. But he had a plan, and a guy named Harry Cooper, and I don't know the relationship between the two men, but Harry Cooper, with some financial support from other people, got the book printed. And if somebody's deep into this kind of subject, the title is called Space, the Final Frontier. And Clark McClellan is the name. The editor is Harry Cooper. McClellan is kind of a hard one to spell. It's MC and then capital CLELLAND. And he has lots of stories beyond, the ones I just told you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm taking a breath.
Okay. I think that, all of us have seen, it's been called conspiracy, and yet it's not, because I have a friend whose father was one of the military guards at Area 51. Now, this man was in the military for a very long time, and when he... When he was, dying even, she said to him, can you tell me what went on? And he just looked at her and winked. And it was sort of like, there is a mentality within, especially the military, that if you are told something, you do it. You don't, they threaten your life and you believe it. I mean, if somebody said, I'm going to kill you, I'm not sure I'd buy it. But in situations like this, and I think, I go back to Tesla, because it feels to me as though he was actually murdered. But his life was destroyed because of what he wanted to share with the public and wasn't able to. And these are not isolated cases. It happens all the time. And when you think of our government, you don't think of a government that will heavy-handed people to the point where they're afraid to talk. A lot of the astronauts that went to the moon saw alien spacecrafts and have not been able to talk about it. And so, you do begin to wonder just, what is being kept from us. And certainly this poor man, his life was ruined because of it.
And he was frustrated, I think, from that time on, because He wanted to get the information out, and it was like he was being blocked every time he tried to. And so I think, you know, it's too bad he couldn't have just totally disconnected and walked totally away, because the man must have been frustrated all the time. But one of his friends was another astronaut. His name was James Irwin, and he was on the Apollo 12, you know, flight to the moon. And I'm going to quote you on this. This is an excerpt from what was written in Clark's book, and this is Irwin talking. And he said, "Yes, Dave," and Dave was the, I think, the commander for the Apollo 15 mission. And he said, "Yes, Dave Scott and I observed several small whitish or metallic objects flying overhead. Whatever those things were, they had intelligence, performing tight angular dives and port and starboard sweeps above us. We heard no sound of thrust. They were very fast critters." He said, "Yes, there were what we call lunar tracks on the surface, as I recall, just like a vehicle tracks, which was very strange because we had not been traveling there in the lunar rover before we made this visit. They were not made by any other known craft of the United States or the USSR. It almost appeared as exploratory mining activities into the lunar surface with a few what appeared to be as efforts of, mining or digging for a mine." He said, "I also briefly saw what appeared to be structures in the far distance above and beyond the mountains of Hadley Rill, structures that appeared like glass or crystalline high above the lunar horizon. I had a good view of whatever it was or is." So that is a quote from astronaut James Irwin that he shared with Clark McClellan, which is in Clark's book.
Uh-huh.
So that's an example of, how it's just so hard to get the truth to come out. And another story I did quite some time ago was, let's see if I can even remember her name. Donna Hare. Her name was Donna Hare. And she was an artist for NASA. She had won awards for NASA. She was very talented. And she confessed on a radio show in Washington, D.C. A number of years ago, I can't remember now what year it was, that she and others deliberately and were directed to airbrush out structures that were in photos of the moon.
Wow.
So the truth comes out, but it comes out in little bits and pieces, oftentimes spread out over great periods of time, and often at the great expense of those who share the information.
Yeah, that's the sad thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like, my God, you know, how can you, how can you, you get to the point where it's how can you trust anything?
Well, I'm going to tell you something that I hadn't thought about until maybe a couple months ago.
Uh-huh.
The aliens are more in charge of things than I think we think we think. That was a sentence for you. And they've been quoted as saying that they don't think we're ready. So they may be the ones that are clamping down on information being revealed. It may not be the fault of our government.
I do believe also that there is a non-intervention. And when Berg went down below, he was basically told that they were under orders to not interfere with us, but, you know, to observe and when the time was right, to help us along. And then we got atomic power and, Screeching Hawk came to a lot of stuff, and it was like they have to stop us from, you know, utilizing atomic power. And when purportedly, I don't know for sure, I wasn't there, but when Eisenhower met with the aliens, it is said that one of the reasons that he he turned down, one of the offers given him was that he had to stop using atomic power, and he refused to do that. So it feels like it makes sense to me, a non-intervention, because certainly I think somehow, I think we shouldn't have discovered atomic power. I think that, you know, we were in enough trouble when it came to killing each other before that happened. But so my thought is, you know, I know that there are aliens that have helped out certain people in certain places, and yet if they've been here for centuries or millions of years, as some of the races say, in many ways, they were here before we were, so it's actually their planet, sort of, and yet they can't give us the technology that would help us to get to the place they're at, because they're not really permitted to because of that non-intervention code. And yet we've reverse engineered a lot of their vehicles, theoretically.
Well, I'm not sure we can be trusted with much more.
I think you're right.
I think we're right, too. And what's going on over in Ukraine right now we're closer to a war, you know, that would have impact us in a great way than ever, I mean, since World War II.
Well, they're also lining up. There's what's happening over there in the Ukraine, and it's almost like, and in the wings, China is about to, you know, usurp Taiwan again. So, you know, we're seeing humanity as a whole regressing into military and war and power struggles and all sorts of stuff like that, which for a while we didn't have. You know, it may have been under the surface, but it wasn't as in our face as it is now. And so many people keep thinking that, you know, we're so evolved that it's time that we ascend to new levels and become part of a cosmic brotherhood. And I couldn't disagree more.
The older I get, the more discouraged I am at how dumb we are as a species.
Oh, gosh, yeah. I mean, I do believe there is a vast brotherhood out there, but I would like to hope that they were further along than we are, because the inhumanity we show to each other is just—it's painful, and it's frightening, and it's horrible. And every time you turn around, there's something else going on that is, you know, just—it's wrenching. We had the Holocaust. We have the Uyghurs. We have, you know, and then we have our own country, which is going through changes too. So that our system of government may well change because of all of the upset and everything that's going on around us. So I think we're here at a very interesting time, and it's really quite fascinating.
Isn't it an old Chinese curse? May you live in interesting times?
No.
I'm not sure that's accurate. I've gotten that secondhand, but I've heard it a number of times.
Well, I think that's appropriate, but it's also the other comment, and I don't know where it comes from. It's not mine, I can tell you that. But, you know, you have to pay attention to history or you'll be forced to repeat it. And I think that's what's happened.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so many people are turning,
back,
you know, blind eyes. Go ahead.
Jumping back to the aliens perhaps trying to keep us from, you know, keeping our governments from keeping us from knowing things, and that truly could be the case. And there was the head of the Israeli Security Space Program. His name was Chaim Eshed, and he came out in December of 2020, and I found the article in the Jerusalem Post, and he said quite a bit, but there were a couple lines that stuck out from the article. He said, "They have been waiting for humanity to evolve and reach a stage where we will generally understand what space and spaceships are. There's an agreement between the U.S. government and the aliens. They signed a contract with us to do experiments here. they too are researching and trying to understand the whole fabric of the universe, and they want us as helpers. And then he also said there's an underground base in the depths of Mars where their representatives are and also our American astronauts. So I'm kind of shifting the blame from the government to the possibility that these aliens are keeping a clamp on, you know, what we're allowed to know. That's very possible.
And yet, you know, we've got the conspiracy theory with the secret space program that's out there that you know, has been out there for decades. And the fact that there is some sort of center on the moon, and again in Mars, there are already colonies there. And, you know, the more I look at it, the more I research it, the more I look at the different books, and a lot of them, if you read them 10 years ago, you would have said, this is poppycock.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, today, it's not poppycock.
It could very well be true. It's very hard to prove it. It's very hard to prove it, but it could very well be the case.
Well, look at what happens to you with your Google the Arctic, Google the Moon, and Google Mars. You found things in all of those places when you've been searching for whatever is there. And you have found things, and yet when you try to publicize them and people go to those sites, they have been airbrushed out by someone, something, and you intelligently get a screen view of it so you have something to show people, like, this is what I saw, and this is what is there now. I mean, I did that with, I think it was something in the Antarctic that you gave the GPS to. I went to the GPS, and there was nothing there, and yet your picture showed clearly structures and layouts of a town.
Right,
so,
and you can go and you can put the two, you know, the one that they've messed with and the one that I originally found. And if you look real carefully, you can see hints of what I had seen in the first photo, but never enough to be conclusive.
But you know, there are people, I won't call them whistleblowers, but there are people that, you know, have come out of the closet, so to speak, and said, you know, yeah, I was one of the people that airbrushed a lot of the stuff from NASA, you know, and
mm-hmm.
You know, why would they not want us to know this? Why would they keep us in the dark? It's not a fact that we can't deal with it, because that's ridiculous. But there are other countries, like in South America, where the UFO material is free. It's out there. They talk about it. It's there. This is
mm-hmm.
what happens. So the United States.
So we're the worst. We're the worst at covering it up, I guess.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Most of the time, people get off easy, so to speak, like Clark McClellan. He lived to be an old man.
Uh-huh.
Like I said, he died about a year ago. But not everybody's so lucky. Quite a number of years ago now, I did an article about William Pollack. William Pollack designed the security system for Area 51, also for Air Force One, which is the president's plane. And I have met his wife, interviewed her, and she is absolutely convinced that he was killed. And they can do it in a way where it looks like, you know, it was natural causes. But she absolutely believes that. And one of the stories that she shared with me, that was one of his stories, was that he had to go to a meeting at Tonopah. Tonopah is out in Nevada. It's a little bit more secretive than Area 51, or a little less known. And when he went into this building where they were having this meeting, where everybody was going to present their information, this plane pulled up as close to the door as possible. This man got out with a briefcase. He was described as having like high European style clothing or suit and shoes. The man sat in the back and he listened to everybody present their information. Obviously, it would be top secret type of information. He spoke briefly, I guess, at the very end, and Bill told his wife that he spoke in high German. Then he got back in the plane and took off. And there are indications in pieces like that piece that indicate that the Nazis may still be running things behind the scenes.
Oh, no question. Brad Olson's newest book, Beyond Esoteric, Escaping from the Prison Planet, does talk about the fact that and it's the Nazis that we brought over in Operation Paperclip.
Correct.
And you know, these are people that we changed their names. We gave them jobs. We gave them new careers. We gave them new names. And of course, they brought over with them too a lot of the gold that the Nazis had, you know, sent over mm-hmm. to the United States to be used here. So, yeah, the Nazis are still there, obviously. And I think one of the things that to me is so frightening is how, if it is true what they say, that they have integrated themselves into every aspect of our government, and so that there's no part of our government that is clean and clear and just for the U.S., that there is this influence in there, and it's being controlled from somewhere else, and I don't know where.
Right.
So it's something to watch for. It's something to pay attention to. And just like with the Admiral Berg material, there was a swastika. There were German names there, and it was kind of like, okay, so... And then you have the theory and a lot of material that says that the Nazis actually did have a base under the ice, miles under the ice, and that a lot of the U-boats that have not been found are still there, and so it's and a lot of the scientists apparently were taken to that particular place so that they could continue their research, and I'm not talking as much the horrible things that Mengele did. I'm talking about scientists who were into the technology and seeing, you know, how something worked and how could they incorporate it into something of their own. Because with high jump, you don't know if those were alien saucers that attacked Admiral Berg, or if they were German ones that had been retro developed because of the saucers that they had, that they could, you know, kind of retrofit and understand what was going on and build their own. So,
mm-hmm.
And isn't it, was it on Mars or was it on the moon where there was a building in the shape of a swastika?
I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, it doesn't come from skyships over cashiers, but I do think that there is a building or a structure that is in the shape of a swastika that may have been a base for the Nazis at some point in time. Don't know if they're still there, but yeah, no, they've gone underground, but they are still there. And, you know, with the massive tunnels that are being, you know, that are being drilled underneath us, miles down, you know, we're just sort of like ants. You know, it's kind of like. Are you a gardener at all?
No, not really.
Well,
can I understand even if I'm not?
Sure. peonies, when they get their buds, in order for the buds to bloom, ants have to eat the coating that is on the bud, so that the flower will be able to bloom. And in many ways, I think we are the ants on the surface that are taking away so that something beneath us or beyond us is going to be able to take over and flower. So
I've said this many times. I'm a short-term pessimist and a long-term optimist.
I'm right with you.
So in the long run, I think there will be good outcomes, but I don't think we're done going through all the awful stuff.
No, I don't think so either. And, you know, just as an observer, obviously I suffer at the grocery store and the gas pump like everyone else does. I came out of the grocery store today with, I think, 7 apples, a sandwich, and a bottle of vitamin C. It cost me $70.
My goodness.
Yes.
Is that all you got?
That's all I got.
That can't be right. You sure somebody didn't try to cheat you at the cash register?
Yeah, no, the apples were real good apples. They were Cosmic Krispies, and they're delicious. But I may have to curb my appetite here. And where I used to come out of the grocery store between 100 and 200, now it's between 200 and 300, and it's like overnight.
Wow, you must eat a lot.
Or not well. I don't know what it is, but thinking seriously of, you know, I did put aside a lot of food, and I'm going to get a freezer, and I'm going to stock my freezer with stuff, and, you know, if there is a hard time that's coming along, I'll be able to eat my way through it, and if not, I'll eat well. But it's, you know, you see these things coming, and who could have possibly anticipated that when the pandemic hit, that the big thing that everybody struggled for was toilet paper, of all things.
Mm-hmm.
And now, with these trucking convoys that are not obviously delivering stuff, the shelves are just there are things that are empty that they aren't being able to get. It's hard to get a good used car because they can't get the parts for the cars because a lot of it comes from China or a lot of it is stuck on a ship floating out in the harbor someplace. So that, you know, I've seen grocery shelves empty for the first time ever. You know, that they just can't get the food in. It's not that it's not available. It's that the stores can't get the material. So, you know, I think that we're seeing a new form of government is going to take over. I don't know what it's going to be. Wish I was that good a psychic, but I'm not. All I know is in order for humanity to move forward, we have to tear stuff down before we can build stuff up. And that's what we're seeing. So
the tearing part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
a few people who've been real rascals are beginning to get caught. So that's kind of good. That's encouraging. By the way, I felt real strongly about this, and I posted something on. We have a Facebook page for the website, and I found a cartoon that was actually done by a cartoonist that I worked with when I worked at the Orlando Sentinel, and it has a little boy at one computer, and he's saying to the adult, "I'm being cyberbullied." And the adult at the other computer says, "Tell me about it." And it's a cartoon of Uncle Sam being whacked over the head with a cartoon of Putin, which says Russian hacks. And so I used that cartoon, and then I just said, "With the rumblings of war in Ukraine, computer and electrical grids far beyond that region could be attacked, including those in the USA. Make sure you have lots of cash that's readily available. If the systems are taken down, even for a relatively short time, it could be a problem without a stash you can access." So I just was feeling that so strongly I had to put it on the Facebook page, and that's not generally what I do. I generally post things that are on the website. On the Facebook page,
an intro
with a link to the website.
The other thing that's happening, and they're finding that people in D.C. are suffering from the Havana syndrome, where electronics were used to get at people's heads and cause headaches and blackouts and all sorts of things. And it, the first time they saw it was in Havana by our embassy, but it's occurring now in Washington, D.C. as well. And I think that's something that you know, people have to also be aware of.
It's warfare.
It is. And the other thing, too, to pay attention to is that HAARP was originally set up to help with the weather. And I believe they have used it as a weapon rather than anything else.
But they've also used it to manipulate weather as a weapon.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I think the Haiti tsunami was something that we did ourselves. I mean, if HAARP had been put up to help balance the weather, then why didn't it, you know, put rain over the massive fires that were all over the West Coast? And
right.
Certainly, why didn't it try to change the tracking of hurricanes and typhoons? The only way I have seen HAARP utilized is through high-frequency technology aimed at people rather than the weather. And that's scary, and it bothers me.
Mm-hmm. I used to do post-HAARP maps periodically, especially when there would be like a severe kind of storm. I could see it being built up with on the HAARP maps. And it got to the point where those were taken down. You can no longer publicly access those.
No, it's between that and chemtrails, and I used to laugh at chemtrails. Now I am not laughing. What's happening to our environment? What's happening to our food? You know, it's sort of like, how do you keep clean and clear?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I think we can. I think that being aware and alert and paying attention and being able to discern what is conspiracy theory and crazy people and conspiracy theory that's accurate. And because the two are so similar, it's hard to tell the difference.
Mm-hmm. Right now, I think we're being dominated by crazy people.
Yes, I would agree.
I think that's a much bigger problem. I mean, I cannot believe the kind of people that get in positions of power and control who are absolutely radically, I don't know. I don't have any words for these people. So,
well, they're either incompetent or they are. They're not crazy because I think they know what they're doing, or they are putting into positions of power people who are incompetent so that they can run rampant over them, and that's really a very intelligent way of taking over without taking over.
Right.
You know, why go in? Why go in with a coup when you can put people in power that are incompetent and they're going to screw the government up so that all you have to do is pick up the pieces when everything is said and done?
Right.
It's
anyhow.
I'm
going to switch this because I think that your audience deserves to have a more upbeat thing to end on here. And
okay.
This just got posted. I haven't even sent out announcements of it, but the webmaster put it up today. The title is "Boy's Past Life as a Fighter Pilot: Incredible Proof." And I've read books. I mean, many books on reincarnation. Starting with the research of Dr. Ian Stevens, who studied 3,000 cases of children who claimed to remember past lives. In fact, he devoted much of his 50-year career at the University of Virginia School of Medicine to documenting this. Well, none of his cases come close to this, and none of the cases by other researchers come close to this. This is the most incredible past life story I've ever seen or read, and it's written in a form that's easy to read. The book is called Soul Survivor. If anybody is interested in the topic, it is worth reading. And what makes it work is the father of the little boy was adamantly opposed to the possibility of reincarnation. He really fought it every step of the way. And so he was absolutely driven to disprove these things that his son, who was a toddler, or would say. Well, it didn't work out that way. Everything he found just proved that what his son was saying was true. And it makes for a good read. And if you're the least bit interested or even just curious about reincarnation, great book to read called Soul Survivor.
Oh, there is definitely truth to that. And interesting you say that, because the next show that I'm doing with Solaris Blue Raven, which is supposed to be this Sunday, but we're going to move it to the following Sunday, is on past lives.
Okay.
So we're going to be going into those, too. I think there is great validation for the fact of it. Just look at the Dalai Lama. That deals with reincarnation, you know, right off the bat, because when one dies, they go for a search to find where he is reincarnated, and he has to pass a number of amazing tests in order to be, you know, claimed to be the new Dalai Lama, and then they school him and teach him and you know, groom him to take over, and that's how this last Dalai Lama got picked. And this Dalai Lama is an amazingly wise man, so that having gone through that process is really quite amazing. So definitely we will check that out, and you know, I will have to go. Now that the show's almost over, I'll have to go to your website and check it out.
This isn't the most incredible part of the story. It's just one where I found good visuals for it. And I've got pictures of three of the G.I. Joes. One has dark hair, one has red hair, and one has blonde hair. And those were his toys. And he named them. He was little. And he gave them names that his parents couldn't understand where the names had even come from, because they didn't know anybody by the names of Billy, Walter, and Leon. When his dad got deep into his research, he found out that three of this little boy's fellow pilots back in World War II had those names. And
oh, wow.
the hair color matched the men themselves and the names.
Oh, that's amazing.
And they even tracked down, he had a sister that was still living. And I've got a great picture of the two of them together. And he looks so thrilled to be next to her. And even though he's a little boy, he's got his arm around her almost like a big brother. And he was her big brother. And he knew some stuff that she had that nobody else knew she had. And so it was things like that helped prove that, you know, he absolutely had a past life. So
well,
I think more people need to consider that reincarnation is a reality.
Absolutely. And you know, there are some people that, you know, fake it, and then some people that are authentic like this. And I think there's one about a little boy too in Mongolia. I think my sister sent me a link to that. Not, I'll go look for that to see if I can find it. It's a fascinating thing, and it can give you great information and insight, so long as you're not using it to just play around and avoid the reality that you're supposed to be living now.
Right.
But it can give you a greater depth of understanding of what's going on as well. So as we draw to a close, I want to send everybody, once we're off the air, to www.skyshipsovercashiers.com. It's a fabulous website, and you will get lost and enjoy the trip. And Mary, thank you so much again for being with me again. This is one of my favorite shows of all of them.
By the way, one final thing. Right beneath the story about the little boy that I just told you about, I have evidence of reincarnation in the Christian Bible, because the most adamant disbelievers of reincarnation tend to be conservative Christians, and I think they'll be surprised that the Bible really speaks of it. Not using that word, but clearly they are speaking about reincarnation. So with that,
absolutely.
I will wish you all a good evening.
Thanks again, Mary. And thank you, everyone, for joining us. Mary will be back the last Wednesday of the month. And please make sure you check out the YouTube channel and subscribe or follow. And let us know you're there because we really appreciate it. And we enjoy knowing that people are paying attention. It gives us greater insight and greater understanding as to what you're listening to and what you like, and makes it easier for us to program accordingly. Thanks a lot, and good night, everybody.